From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, music in your head, how it helps keep your head straight.
I think we should try listening to that song, Tennessee Waltz, by Patti Page.
That one sounds good.
Yeah.
Mobile phones, they're covered in germs, but they're easy to sterilize.
So many people having their coffee or their Egg Benedict in the morning with their platform just next by, and the microbes are absolutely happy.
And the first, smallest, and lightest element in the universe, hydrogen, is the great light hope in a zero-carbon world.
So just at the payment terminal, it says you can refuel at pump number one. You click it on as like with a pistol. You can see the flickering sound. So first, it's gonna give a push of hydrogen, then it stops. Then it's a mean to calculate how much hydrogen is into the car. It communicates, and then you hear the gases flowing.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Stay with us. Old songs linger in your head, usually pleasurable, perhaps a godsend. Indelible musical memories may help restore cognition and speech in people suffering from dementia or after a stroke. Here's something to sing and think about.
So we're training volunteers this coming week, 6 new volunteers to listen independently with residents.
Natalie Baird is a recreation facilitator at Misericordia Health Center in Winnipeg. She and her colleagues are helping dementia patients remember and speak by getting them to sing.
Often what happens is when I go and see people, they're very disengaged. After listening to a few songs, they really come back to life, I would say, and come out of their shells.
Families appreciate the results, says Ellen Locke, Misericordia's rec manager.
We have a good 10-15 minute reminiscence session after the music, which is huge. It sort of brings that person back to the family.
Ellen, Natalie, and I go visit one of their singing residents, 89-year-old Elsie.
We brought some of your favorite songs, Elsie.
Oh. You feel like listening to some music?
Not really.
No? Natalie's here. You always listen with Natalie.
Elsie is awake, but distant. She'll need some warming up before music begins. At another hospital in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Roger Dumas is investigating the secrets of music circuits in the brain and how rugged melodic pathways may help restore others that have been lost. His tool of choice?
Yeah, our Moog synthesizers.
Analog synthesizers shrouded in cables fill Dumas's office. Gold and platinum discs he's helped produce for Janet Jackson, Prince, and switched-on Bach creator Peter Schickola adorn the walls. These days, Dumas uses Moog synthesizers to tickle brain circuits and get them to sing back. The payoffs may be huge.
If we can figure out how to extract a melody from the brain, we could help people who are locked in communicate.
Dumas plays Moog morsels to volunteers wearing sensor-packed helmets that detect magnetic waves sailing across the surface of their brains.
Would you like to hear it?
Yes, please.
Okay.
This is what the brain sounds like as it hums along. Roger Dumas's Moog brain interface is more than just a high-tech parlor trick. It reveals the brain's astonishing ability to process and retain music, to do complex things like predict next notes or capture melodic contour. Neural circuits like these may help restore speech and cognition circuits that have been downed by stroke or dementia.
The brain is resilient, and you can recruit brain areas to compensate for any loss, and musical ability or musical recall may be a way to jog the memory.
I think we should try listening to that song.
Back in Winnipeg, a cheap pair of headphones and a few old tunes is all 89-year-old Elsie needs to perk up.
Tennessee Waltz by Patti Page.
That one sounds good.
Yeah. Why don't we get back?
Natalie slips phones over Elsie's head, then combs through a playlist on her iPod.
So we'll go down to Elsie right there.
Patty Page gets the nod.
Yes, I lost my little darling.
I introduced her to my loved one. And while we were watching,
Elsie's eyes light up as she sings. She and Natalie have listened to Patty Page before. This time is different, though.
You were singing the lyrics when the lyrics weren't playing. It was just the musical interlude. And you knew all the lyrics. That's pretty amazing.
I like my music.
Yeah.
Elsie wants to hear another song.
Apple Blossom Time by the Andrew Sisters, I think.
Yeah.
Let's try that one.
Elsie's voice is monotonous at first.
I'll be with you to change.
Then she starts to express herself.
Church bells will chime you.
How it is that brains shed memory while sparing lyrics and music is one of neuroscience's great mysteries. Can Hardy music circuits jog cognition and speech? Hopes are high. One thing is clear. Singing old songs makes elderly people happy, and that's good for their health.
Beautiful. Beautiful, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh.
Read more about music and memory at greenplanetmonitor.net. Guess what? Mobile phones are covered in germs. Ah! You talk into them, covering them with droplets. You touch them with hands you just sneezed or coughed into, hands that have touched all sorts of surfaces. You take them into the toilet. I spoke with Lottie Tajuri, an Australian researcher who knows just how contaminated mobile phones are and how you can clean them up. Can you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are and where you are and a little bit about yourself.
So I am an associate professor at Bond University in Australia. I am an associate professor in molecular biology and genomics, basically very much interested in different type of research, including autoimmunity, but as well biosecurity and public health. And my latest research is about, as you know, the fact that mobile phones are contaminated platforms and they pose a high risk for public health and biosecurity issues.
What drew you to this area of research, Lottie?
This is kind of personal as a start. I had my baby girl. She was born back in 2014, and my wife was in breech, like pregnancy. And basically what happened is during the cesarean in the theater, I saw healthcare workers walking around with their mobile phones, gloves on, and some without gloves. So as a microbiologist, an immunologist, it really raised a red flag for me.
Totally. I mean, it's interesting that people, of course, we're aware of this, people use their smartphones all the time. The smartphones are almost like life support systems for human beings these days. They're constantly in people's hands. And I like to look around on the train or on the street or in restaurants, and people have smartphones in their hands all the time. Do you have statistics? I know you do, on how many times people touch their smartphones in the course of a day?
Look, as you said, to my view, mobile phones are actually third hands. And yes, we touch them so many times a day. To tell you a bit of stats, between 2,000 and 5,000 times we touch our mobile phones in a day. And we will be using those platforms. And yes, they are very good. They are microcomputers. We can get so many communications. We can watch whatever movies. I mean, I understand the value of it. But we use them now more than 3 hours and 15 minutes a day. And in some country like Brazil, it's more than 5 hours a day.
So you were saying that people typically touch their smartphone between 2 and 5,000 times a day.
Absolutely. So you understand, you can actually do some SMS, you can write on WhatsApp, etc. So you are constantly touching those platforms. And the big problem, the huge problem, is that, as I said, those platforms are your third hand that we never sanitize, that we never wash or clean. And the problem is that those platforms are in some way five-star accommodation hotels for microbes, because we never wash them. We deposit microbes with our hands all the time. And this is a huge concern, because those mobile phones are actually electronic platforms that make those microbes thrive because of the conditions. You know, you switch on your mobile phone, you give some sorts of temperature control for those microbes to thrive. When you eat with your mobile phones for your breakfast, lunch, you've seen so many people having their coffee or their egg benedict in the morning with their platform just next by. And you have there, you deposit some food on those platforms, and the microbes are absolutely happy. So not only it's heated, but you give them like almost a free buffet all the time when you go and eat. And on top of that, when you talk over your mobile phone, you actually spit out in some way some salivary droplets, and that give moisture to those microbes to also thrive and grow. So that is a huge issue. And our research has found that there is a huge, absolutely huge spectrum of different microorganisms. You name, of course, viruses, bacteria, but you have as well fungi. And you also have protozoa parasites on those platforms.
And people take their smartphones into the toilet.
Absolutely. And those are the studies that we did actually in the community, but as well in hospitals. And I'm talking about healthcare workers as well. Like more or less around 50 to 60% of the individuals that we actually surveyed actually use their mobile phones in the toilets, in the bathroom. And that is another huge concern, because you end up having here, of course, some fecal-based contaminations that end up being on your mobile phone. And you talk about microbes, for example, E. coli we found. We found Campylobacter, we found Salmonella, we found Listeria, we found Clostridium difficile. I mean, it is incredible. And I'm talking about viable microorganism. So this is a kind of habit that we do really wrong. And you can understand those habits can have a huge consequence when we talk about, imagine yourself being served a dessert in a buffet where the food handler did use his mobile phone or her mobile phone and did use it inside the bathroom just before serving you. Same thing with healthcare workers. The healthcare workers, unfortunately, don't really fully know the problem. And this is the reason why our research here is trying to really strongly make an awareness of the issue, because those mobile phones that are contaminated are Trojan horse type of platforms. So we don't know that we carry the enemy with us. But having healthcare workers using as well mobile phones in the bathroom is a real concern. You know, most of the time, and of course, they will wash their hands all the time. The healthcare workers, many of us in the community and in other professional settings, we know that we can do something to control infection spread. Well, we wash our hands. The problem is that if you touch your mobile phone, which is contaminated and filthy, you cross-contaminate your hands all over again. What does it mean? Mobile phones negate hand washing.
Now, you were mentioning, Lottie, about the number of bacterial types that you find on mobile phones. But this is, I gather, this is an underestimate, because it's challenging. Not all microbes can be grown on standard cultures. It's difficult to culture everything. Take a swab of a smartphone screen and see how many bugs are growing, how many colony forming units there are there. It's an underestimate. Can you talk about this?
Yeah, we did actually look at that. And basically, the story, if I make it quite short, we did at the time a quick systematic review, scoping review, around 56 studies across 24 countries. And we found out with all those articles that looked at mobile phones that indeed, as you said, they did some culture-based identifications of microorganisms. And they really listed a small amount of key type of bacteria like Staphylococcus aureus or E. coli, those kind of bugs, if I may say. But no, our research has been going a little bit further than that. So we didn't want to only see the tip of the iceberg. We wanted to see the whole immersed iceberg. And what we did was to actually also use, on top of culture type of experiment, but we did use a high technology called next generation sequencing. So we did a metagenomic analysis, meaning that we extracted the DNA of all those bugs that were from the swabs of those mobile phones. And by having this DNA, we did sequence all those bases, all those DNA nucleic acids, and it allowed us to find the signatures of all the viruses that were there on the mobile phone, all the bacteria, all the fungi, and all the protozoa. And on top of that, our research, which is right now the top number one, have looked at the amount of antibiotic-resistant genes that are on mobile phones. And we also looked at virulent factor genes. So what are virulent factors? As you know, those are kind of genes that will enhance a pathology if the microbe is pathogenic. We found a stack amount of microorganisms, as I said. Like, I'll give you an example. In 26 mobile phones that we swabbed in healthcare setting, in a hospital, we found more than 11,000 microbes. And we found more than 600 virulent factor genes, as well as kind of antibiotic resistant genes. So we have here mobile phones that are mobile petri dishes harboring a huge amount of microbes. And on top of that, those microbes are superbugs.
And so just virulence factors and antimicrobial resistance, we're basically, to make things simple, we're talking about bacteria that are really pathogenic, that could make you incredibly sick and that are untreatable with, or difficult to treat with, antibiotics.
Absolutely. The superbugs are indeed microorganisms, like bacteria, as you mentioned, that have the capacity to counteract the medication that we use to fight against them. And they have multiple ways to do that. They use mutations, or they have the capacity to harbor some particular attributes that will, for example, get pumping out those antibiotics away from their own organism. They are very sophisticated. And we found, as I say, the stack amount of those particular attributes. And that is a huge concern, because in our pocket, we have mobile phones that we touch, as you said before, all the time. But on top of that, we might actually disseminate those bugs all around. And I'm going to give you an example about my fear is in the field of biosecurity. Imagine the amount of passengers taking, you know, modern transport like planes that are traveling all around the world from one part of the globe to the other part of the globe in matters of hours while they actually travel with their mobile phones. We know for a fact that microbes stay alive on mobile phones for not hours only, not days only, but even weeks on your mobile phone. So you understand that when you land, like I think you're based in Holland right now, if someone lands in Holland, have you ever had a custom officer stopping the person and looking at the mobile phones and what is on mobile phones? And I tell you another analogy. Do you think that if you land in your country and you have, let's say, a real petri dish full of colonies, full of bacteria, I think the custom officer will not be happy with you. However, they let everybody come in with their mobile phones, but the mobile phones are actually mobile petri dishes.
And mobile phones are warm, of course. And so microorganisms, they don't just survive, they actually grow on smartphone screens.
Absolutely, and this is the reason why we say that mobile phones are breeding grounds for those microorganisms. And yes, the fact that we switch them on or we keep them in the pocket, they are warm. And the problem with that, by the way, is that this particular temperature is actually quite close to the body temperature. Like if you leave your mobile phone in the in your pocket, well, what does it mean? It means that actually your mobile phone might be a magnet of microorganisms that are actually suitable for you to be infected with. So we actually carry with us not only the enemy, but a selected type of enemy that is going to be a very big harm on us.
You've written in your article, this is an article published in 2020, but perhaps there's something more recent, that there are no guidelines, well, guidelines in hospitals, in North American or developed world hospitals, there are no guidelines for the use of smartphones.
Absolutely.
And medical practitioners, they're using their smartphones for, I mean, smartphones, they're smart, they're great. There are all kinds of applications on smartphones that health professionals use to find out what drug should be used, what are the counterindications, endless numbers of really useful applications on smartphones that really encourage health practitioners to have their smartphone in their hand while they're treating patients. And there are no guidelines. Can you talk about this? This is the guideline situation for the use of smartphones in hospitals?
Look, indeed, you're right. I mean, if you look at the World Health Organization or the CDC, Center for Disease Control and Prevention, you don't see really a strong, let's say, emphasis on mobile phones used in healthcare settings. And indeed, I can tell you that in hospitals here in Australia, there is nothing at all. And this is obviously the same thing happening in other countries. And this is a big problem because you've been talking about hospitals. In hospitals, as you know, there is a huge amount of individuals that go there because they are obviously having health problems and they are immunocompromised. And if you have here a medical doctor or nurse that use their mobile phones without knowing that those mobile phones are actually real fomites, the real contaminated type of platforms, well, they might actually convey those microbes straight to the patients. And the patients will end up having these infections, which is called nosocomial disease, because you contracted this type of infection within the hospital. But the problem is, indeed, there is no regulations, implementations, legislations. There is nothing around this kind of, let's say, infection control against mobile phones. And the big problem, I think, is that the healthcare workers don't really fully know the issue that is around mobile phones. And that, I think, is a disaster type of recipe for immunocompromised individuals. And I am certain, I mean, I haven't done that research yet, but I'm certain that mobile phones contribute to the hospital-acquired infections. I am absolutely certain. And if we sanitize mobile phones, if we use them in the 5 moments of hand washing that healthcare workers do really well, if we include that sanitization of mobile phones, I am certain that you will end up having less nosocomial diseases, less hospital-associated infections, and less pain for those patients.
Let me back up for a second. What kinds of microorganisms do we find naturally on our hands? Suppose I go wash my hands with soap and hot water. That's time zero. And then in the course of a day, I mean, I'm not constantly washing my hands unless I have some sort of psychological pathology. Just normal set of hands, pair of hands that are kind of touching things in the course of a day. Even, you know, coughing into my, you know, doing a cough into my hands rather than doing the elbow routine. What kinds of things are living on my hands?
Well, look, you have all sorts of normal biota, that we have on our skin or like you mentioned about coughing in our mouth, you have Streptococci oralis, you have Streptococci sanguinis, or that you get to see in your buccal area. You have Staphylococcus epidermidis and even Staphylococcus aureus, which are part of the normal biota. But the problem with what I just said with the mobile phones and back to the healthcare setting, a patient that is immunocompromised, you don't want to get any type of infections towards that individual. What it means is a normal microorganism getting in the bloodstream of an immunocompromised patient, it's another recipe for disaster. I give you an example. When we for example, did swabs in a neonatal intensive care unit in a hospital here in Australia, we found not only E. coli, but we found, for example, Bordetella pertussis, which is responsible for whooping cough.
On people's hands.
Yes, Streptococcus pneumonia we found on those platforms. And that becomes an incredible dangerous, and at least a high risk that probably the public health authorities need to look at and the infection control staff look at. And I can tell you that those mobile phones, as you mentioned before, are used by everybody, and gloves on for some, which is really a worrisome for me.
How can one clean mobile phones?
Look, actually, it's interesting. You talk to me about the fact that you are from Canada. I am talking actually with some companies, some based from US, the USA, and some from Canada. And there is one company that is doing in, which is, by the way, based in Toronto, called Glissner, doing a particular device, which is a phone UVC sanitizer. And that sanitizer, which is quite interesting, there are many of them in the market, but this one is very interesting because it does the job of getting rid of those microbes in only 20 to 30 seconds. And even the last version I heard about does the job in 10 seconds. What does it mean? They use ultraviolet C. It's a device which is where you can slit in your mobile phone. So it's a touchless kind of experience. Your mobile phone gets inside the device and it is sanitized at a particular germicidal wavelength, ultraviolet C radiation. And what does it mean? Well, your mobile phone gets out of the device in 10 seconds. How great it is for the healthcare settings, it's fantastic, because what does it mean? It means that healthcare workers can wash their hands as usual, like what the World Health Organization is asking them to do to prevent infection control. But in the same time, they can slit their mobile phone in that phone UVC sanitizer, which will be, by the way, cleaned in 20 seconds/10 seconds, which is amazing. That simultaneous way of cleaning your two hands and your third hand.
And how about, you know, ordinary people? Can you apply isopropyl alcohol to a smartphone?
Okay, I'm going to tell you a kind of personal venture that I went into. As soon as I had this issue with what I saw in that hospital back in 2014 for the birth of my daughter, I started to actually use alcohol wipes and disinfectant wipes. And the problem with this is that you get rid of a very important layer on top of your mobile phone. And what does it mean? It means that you get the oleophobic layer out of your smartphone. And what does it mean? You lose your tactile experience by actually wiping off your mobile phone. So I would discourage your readers or your listeners to do that, because you're going to damage your phone. The best way forward is to use efficient, robust, and fast ultraviolet C phone sanitizer that will be, by the way, not only available in healthcare setting, but as well in airports and also as well in your own house.
Before we finish our conversation, Lottie, and thank you so much for your time, can you talk a bit about Say Something to reassure people that most microorganisms are harmless and in the final analysis useful and essential for us? If people don't need to be scared of bacteria, because one of the episodes in this series is going to be called Germ Phobia. There are people who are terrified of germs, and they use antimicrobial soaps, and they go crazy cleaning their houses with, domestic home cleanser products that have got, antimicrobial substances in them that promote resistance. You know, I've told my students, the best way to clean your hands is just using ordinary soap and hot water. Avoid the soaps with triclosan in it, because it just promotes resistance. Can you talk a bit about bacteria as good organisms, good creatures that we need?
I mean, with what you just said, I completely agree with you, but there is two facets with the microbes, with those bacteria, if you want to focus on bacteria. And you're right. Indeed, lots of bacteria are commensals, lots of bacteria are mutualistic. So what does it mean is that they are symbiotic, they live with us, and they contribute to our health. So that is the normal biota. We got plenty of bacteria. We have actually way, way more bacteria on us than our own cells. And they actually work with us. This is back to what I said with that symbiotic, mutualistic type of relation those microorganisms have with them.
There's like 10 times more bacteria on us and in us than cells of our own.
Correct. And they contribute to many good things. I mean, some bacteria of your gastrointestinal tract are capable to synthesize vitamin K, which is the vitamin which is essential for coagulation. So they are extremely helpful. And they also can fight, by the way, pathogens. So they prevent pathogens from, stopping by and give you some diseases, because simply this normal biota is already there. And in some way, they become like a kind of shield against pathogen. So yes, for sure, the normal biota, the normal bacteria are really good. The problem, David, is, and I don't disagree with that kind of fear, and I don't want to actually spread fear. However, there is a massive problem that we have now, which is that antibiotic resistant type of microorganism. The problem with this is that and you can have normal biota as well, by the way, being resistant to all those antibiotics. And the problem we have here is that those bugs have the capacity of doing something quite remarkable, which is horizontal genetic transfer. And what does it mean? It means that if a bug is a superbug, it can transfer this kind of superpower of resistance to other type of bugs. And that is a problem, because at one stage, we are going to be surrounded by those superbugs, by those multi-drug resistant organisms. And that's going to be quite dangerous, because if you have a simple cut and you are in the wrong place, wrong moment, but you are exposed to that superbug, then you end up having an infection that might not be curable. The numbers which are associated with antimicrobial resistant death are absolutely astonishing. They're very high. And in 2050, there is a kind of prediction that 10 million people actually will die per year because of that. So what I'm trying to say with our research with the mobile phones here is that why don't we sanitize mobile phones? Because we know mobile phones are third hand. We know that mobile phones are contaminated with heaps amount of different types of microbes. We know that mobile phones actually harbor superbugs. We should sanitize them to reduce at least the spread of those microbes, especially in vulnerable area, which is the hospitals, clinics, dentist practices, or GP practices. On top of that, very important that we sanitize mobile phones in airports, where billions of travelers are never stopped in our customs to actually, sanitize those mobile phones. So basically, what does it mean? We have also an issue of biosecurity, because you know what we found, David, on mobile phones? We found plant pathogens. We found animal pathogens. And what does it mean is that when people land to your beautiful country, Canada, and because the mobile phones have not been sanitized, they might actually introduce very, problematic type of plant pathogens to your country or animal pathogens. And this is the reason why we also call not only for the public health authorities to look at the research we're doing, and we need their help because we want to do more research, so we need more funding, but we also ask the biosecurity officers and the authorities to really do their job a little bit further and zoom in what those mobile phones do harbor.
Lottie Tajouri, thank you so much for your time.
You're more than welcome.
Lottie Tajouri is an associate professor of molecular genetics at Bond University in Robina, Australia. He's also a member of the Dubai Police Scientific Council. Read more about Lottie Tajouri's dirty mobile phone research at greenplanetmonitor.net. Zero carbon emissions, hydrogen is a no-brainer. 3/4 of Earth's surface is covered in water, and each water molecule contains 2 hydrogens, the smallest element, but packed with energy. Indeed, hydrogen is where all living things get energy from. So may future cars and cities. Today, cars and cities are responsible for almost half of global CO2 emissions, but how feasible is hydrogen as a fuel? How green is it? Can hydrogen be produced in the volumes necessary to stave off complete climate breakdown? How quickly? Here's a story for you. I've just arrived in the Belgian port city of Antwerp to visit one of the world's first green hydrogen production and refueling facilities. Dennis Thomas picks me up in his hydrogen-powered car.
Hey.
Good morning.
Dennis, you're in the car that says drive clean hydrogen.
Yes.
Dennis Thomas works for Cummins, U.S. manufacturer of electrolyzers that produce green hydrogen from water. His car is powered by a fuel cell that combines hydrogen with oxygen, water being the only waste product. About 10,000 hydrogen-powered cars have been produced around the world. About 1,000 are on European roads, driving up to 600 kilometers on a tank. Certification systems distinguish clean green hydrogen from gray and blue that are produced from natural gas. The challenge is finding a place to fill up. There are only about 100 hydrogen fueling stations in Europe. Thomas points out where they are on a smart device mounted on his dashboard.
Each green and red dots, those are actually refueling stations in Europe. The blue dots, they are like future refueling stations.
10-minute drive to the port of Antwerp, we pull into one of these refueling stations, operated by CMB. Here, green hydrogen is produced, stored, and pumped.
Electricity, water, being brought together. We split the water into hydrogen and oxygen.
Roy Camp is CMB's chief technology officer. CMB services trucks, buses, and cars. Its specialty, coastal vessels and heavy-duty port vehicles with dual-fuel engines, powered by diesel and green hydrogen. Every kilo of hydrogen replaces dirty diesel.
Ships have a very long lifetime, let's say on average 25 years. So what you have been building over the past years will still be sailing until 2030, 2040, 2050. We know what the emission targets enforced on these dates. Diesel is not the solution. So we need to come up with technology to, let's say, transition. And we believe that on shipping, we can do it.
Coastal vessels are well suited to green hydrogen. In and out of ports on a daily basis, they can tank up and be back on the water. Some provide services to offshore wind farms. CMB's Antwerp facility is a model for other port cities, especially those fed by hydrogen pipelines or tied into green energy grids. And CMB's business model is down-to-earth, oriented to customers operating today, using fossil fuels and current infrastructure. 600 kilometers from Antwerp, in the German city Esslingen, green hydrogen is being introduced in a brand new urban district, rising above an old one. Neue Weststadt, it's called, one of six flagship projects funded by the German government. The district bills itself as climate neutral, so no CO2 emissions or virtually none. This will take time and patience to achieve.
It's a great goal to be climate neutral until 2040 or 2035, but still you have a city that is existing or has been existing for centuries, like Esslingen, and with a certain way of doing things for decades that have kind of been fixed.
Katja Walter is from Esslingen. She knows the path climate neutrality will be bumpy. Esslingen is an old industrial town. Daimler-Benz builds trucks here, but cooperation, flexibility, and patience seem to have paid off.
Where are we now and where are we going?
Well, at the moment right now, we are at the mouth, so to say, to our climate district. We have the station of Esslingen right behind us, which makes the district very, very attractive because mobility is very easy, accessible. And we pass right now the area where Block A is going to be, here on our left-hand side.
Four residential buildings line Neue Weststadt's single street, all powered by renewable energy. The district aims to be socially sustainable too, a celebration of old and new. On one side of the street, in red brick, a 19th century customs house will soon house shops and restaurants. On the other side, new Weststadt, with ground floor space for offices and shops. On the far end, beneath a hillside covered in vineyards, a University of Applied Sciences is now being built. Municipal regulations require that flat roofs be greened. The district's designers convinced the city to let them cover rooftops with solar panels. The district will also be fueled by biogas from nearby waste facilities and hydrogen.
So right beneath that black structure is what we call the Energiezentrale. And here are the electrolyzers and the hydrogen tank, right beneath us at the very moment.
Neue Weststadt's energy facility sits about 10 meters below Building D. The facility is now in operation and producing hydrogen, kilo by kilo.
Right here, we're in the heart of the energy center.
Tobias Neusser manages the facility. It produces 400 kilos of green hydrogen per day. Not very much. By comparison, giant facilities in Brazil and Saudi Arabia aim to produce over 4,000 times that much. Still, Esslingen only needs two wind turbines to satisfy demand, such as it is today. Scaling up will be easy.
Okay, so where does the hydrogen go?
Okay, follow me. Right now we are going into the storage room.
Tobias takes me to his hydrogen tank.
Holy, this is a big tank.
This is a big tank. We have a hydrogen tank here with a volume of about 34 cubic meters.
Can I tap on it?
You can do it. Yeah, that's the sound of hydrogen.
Esslingen's hydrogen is fed into the city's natural gas system, displacing a bit of dirty gas. Down the road, it will also be piped to a nearby industrial district where dirty gray hydrogen is now used. And, under Germany's Clean Vehicle Directive, 45% of bus fleets must be low emission by 2026, and a quarter must be zero emission. By 2030, these targets rise even higher. Many of these buses, and those from nearby Stuttgart, some with diesel engines, will likely come to Esslingen for a tank of green hydrogen. Even now, hydrogen production at Neue Weststadt is a model other German cities are watching. Hydrogen production is not 100% efficient. 60% of the energy used to generate it is lost as heat. Rather than sending that heat into the air, it's pumped into Neue Weststadt's residential buildings, lowering heating costs by half. As larger electrolyzers come into service around the world, there will be lots more heat to pump into urban heating grids, replacing natural gas.
So just at the payment terminal, it says you can refuel at pump number one.
Back at CMB's facility in Antwerp, Roy Kemp pumps hydrogen into his car.
You click it on as like with a pistol. Then you see the count jumping to zero. When it's on zero, I press the button. You can see the flickering sound. So first, it's gonna give a push of hydrogen, then it stops. Then it's a mean to calculate how much hydrogen is into the car. It communicates, and then you hear the gas is flowing.
Enough to drive another 500 kilometers. The world record on a tank of hydrogen, 1,300 kilometers in California, downhill with the wind behind. Learn more about the universe's tiniest, lightest elements at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions, Breda, in the Netherlands. Listen, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. I'm David Kattenberg, over and out for now.